So my name is Brittany Mestis. I am 27 years old. Today is September 6th, 2021. And today I'm speaking with Christopher Jackson, who is a really close friend of mine and also a role model to me. We were recording this interview in Colorado and Florida. All right, so my first question for you today, Chris, is what era did you grow up in?
Okay, so I am part of Generation X. I was born in 1970. So I came of age, as they say, in the 70s and 80s.
And what did you like most about growing up in the 70s and 80s?
I think my favorite thing, I guess, about being part of this generation is we gave American society, Western civilization, history, a couple of really cool things. Rap and hip hop is something that was invented in my generation. And the X Games, as they are today, started with my generation. Tony Hawk, skateboarding, and LA swimming pools that were emptied because of water shortages. Doing crazy things on BMX bikes, that kind of stuff. Even skiing and snowboarding that's all part of Generation X.
Wow, yeah, you guys definitely were some trailblazers for us, weren't you?
I think so.
What was your best learning experience of your youth?
My greatest learning experience of my youth, I think I would have to say in high school I got really involved in politics, both American politics and world politics and geography. And when I was a kid, before the internet, we had Encyclopedia Britannicas, and I would just look through the encyclopedia and look about anything, about anywhere in the world, and want to go there. It's probably part of the reason I joined the military right out of high school, is I wanted to make the world smaller. And I think the best learning experience I had in high school was getting a grasp of geography and the diverse people's groups around the world.
Wow, that's so great. So of course you enlisted right out of high school, right?
Right.
What year was it?
So in 1988, I graduated. We had a lot of snow days that year, so we went. So instead of getting out of school in May, we went until the first week of June. And I graduated in June, and I left home for boot camp that October.
Wow. And why were you so ready to enlist right away?
I was ready to see the world. I didn't travel a whole lot as a kid. I grew up, we were probably, could be classified as lower middle class, maybe working class. We didn't have a lot of money, but I didn't feel I was poor growing up. We'd probably be classified as poor, but I didn't feel I was poor. That being said, though, I didn't really travel a lot as a kid. So I was born in Baltimore. So all my family is still pretty much there in that city. And then my school years, I grew up in a small kind of suburban D.C. town called King George. And that was really the extent of my world. That was all I knew. It was just Northern Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. And I had a hunger to see the world, to see something different, to not be one of those people that was born, lived, and then died within the same 10 square miles of where they were raised.
So what do you remember about the day you enlisted? Were you super excited? Had you talked to your parents about you enlisting?
I mean, yeah, I was excited. I mean, I remember mostly that, I guess it was a double-edged sword, because my mom was, I mean, she was happy and sad at the same time. I mean, she was proud and scared at the same time. So mostly what I remember is just where she was emotionally, I guess.
What branch of military did you enlist for?
So my military service is a two-branch type deal. So I actually did 7 years active duty in the Air Force. I joined the Air Force, like I said, right out of high school. So I was in the Air Force active duty from 1988 to 1996. And then when I got out of the military, I was out for 4 years, and then I was in the Army Reserves. I re-enlisted in the Army Reserves from 2000 to 2003.
What was basic training like for you during your Air Force time? So you left in October, you said, right?
Right.
Was your basic training at as well?
Yeah, so at that time, I think it's extended by 2 more weeks now. I think it's 8 weeks now. At that time, Air Force basic training was 6 weeks at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas. So I was in basic training for 6 weeks from October till October 13th, I believe, is when I left home for basic training. I could be totally wrong on that exact date, but a lot of things that you experience, especially in the military, are ingrained with you forever. And I really think it was October 13th when I left. But I was in basic training for 6 weeks at Lackland, so that put me out of basic training. I remember being there for my birthday, which was November 23rd, and Thanksgiving that year, so I think I was done with basic training probably the first week of December. And it was a lot of it, you know, I was 17. I turned 18 in boot camp. So when you're 17 and you enlist, one of your parents has to sign for you. So that's something else I remember my mom signing, you know, for me to enlist. And so I turned 18 in boot camp. A lot of boot camp is a blur of emotions. Most of what you feel being away from home the first time is fear, and you kind of always question whether on the daily if you made the right decision. You feel small. You really feel a lot smaller than you actually are. You feel small. The training instructors, drill instructors seem larger than life. They seem big, scary people. I mean, I've seen drill instructors. They're no bigger than any other human being. But at that time, with them yelling and, yeah, doing the things that need to be done to mold you into a disciplined, attention to detail oriented person, taking you from that childlike behavior, that childlike brain that you possess as a 17, a 16, 17, 18, 19 year old, sometimes 20, 21 year old, and getting you in a place where you can make very important life and death decisions, and they have to do it in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, depending on whether it's Air Force to Army, Navy, Marine, Coast Guard, you know, anywhere from 6 to 8 to 12, 16 weeks, right? So it's a really big deal. I mean, I'm biased, but as a veteran, I think very highly of men and women that join the military at 17 and 18, as opposed to young men and women that are in college from 17 to 21. It's there's another a level of respect I give to vet. I mean, I live the experience. You grow up so fast where someone who goes to college, they have 4 years to grow up. But people who join the military, you got to grow up in 6 weeks, like I said, 6, 8, 12, 16 weeks.
That's a lot of growing to do in such a short amount of time. And that had to be super hard for you. What was the hardest part of adapting to military life at that age?
It's all hard. I think the hardest part is, like I said, what they teach you to do is, and each branch has its own, you know, different focuses, right? Whereas when you have a branch, say like the Army and Marines that are have a heavy focus on infantry, certainly there are things that an infantryman has to do that I didn't have to. I mean, in the Army, I was an MP, a garrison MP, right? In the Army, it's you have garrison MPs versus field MPs, right? So your field MPs are more infantry-based, closer to the front lines, if you will. I know that's even changed nowadays, but garrison MPs are just that. You're a police force for the base. So, and even in the Air Force, whereas we didn't have an infantry, the training is really focused on paying attention to detail. And what I think the average person, 16, and there's outliers to everything, right? There's exceptions to every rule, but stereotypically, I'm speaking law of averages, average person, myself included, 16 to 21, discipline and detail really aren't the focus of your existence so much. Where in the military, for instance, my first job in the military, I was assigned to a maintenance technician on a mobile air traffic control system. So what my job was after tech school was assigned to an F-16 fighter squadron, and the system I worked on had air traffic controllers that controlled the F-16 squadrons to the forward battle area. So that equipment has to work. So the air traffic controller certainly has their own stressors and their job to do. As a maintenance tech, you have to keep that equipment working because those air squadrons are supporting the infantry. It's a team, so lives are at stake. So you have to pay attention to detail, and that's what basic training provided. That's, I think, the biggest thing I learned, was paying attention to detail. I can remember vividly being told to place your underwear, socks, jewelry in a certain place. And I would say day one, or at least the first couple of days, standing there in your underwear, being inspected, being yelled at, completely, your nerves are shot. You're a nervous wreck. You have these different men and women just screaming at you, not following directions, putting my watch somewhere where I wasn't supposed to. I put it on the left of my foot locker instead of the right, or what have you. But initially being told not to move, you stand there at attention. When the drill sergeant asked me why I put it in the wrong place. I went to reach for my watch to put it in the right place, and the 20 minutes of those drill instructors yelling at me, I mean, that taught me to listen, to follow directions, to pay attention to detail. When you are in a wartime scenario, you don't get a second chance. And that's what I think, I feel boot camp is meant to do.
So after your basic training, what was the major conflict that was happening during your time? Like, did you have to go straight into combat at all?
No. So after basic, I was stationed in South Florida at Homestead. Well, I digress. So right after basic training in Lackland, I went to tech school to learn the individual electronic system that I was going to be assigned to working on. And that was at Keesler Air Force Base in Biloxi, Mississippi. So I was assigned there. I was in Mississippi from about January of 89 to August of 89. And then from there, I was stationed at Homestead. So when I was at Homestead, the conflict that we entered into in 1990 was Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Desert Storm. So I went to, with that unit, I went to Saudi Arabia, stationed just south of the Kuwaiti border, supporting the air mission into Kuwait, moving the Iraqi army back into Iraq from Kuwait during Desert Shield, Desert Storm.
So what exactly was Desert Storm?
So in 1990, Saddam Hussein's Iraqi Red Guard, I think they were. So the Iraqi army invaded Kuwait for the oil fields. Kuwait has very rich reserves, and with OPEC in contracts with the West, it was then and still is a very oil-rich economy. Small country, and Saddam Hussein's army invaded it and took over the oil fields. And long story short, the American military with British and Japanese allied troops moved into Saudi Arabia and forced the Iraqi army out of Kuwait back into Iraq. And that was a very short conflict in 1990.
Was that the only conflict that you had served for?
Yeah, I didn't see any combat. I was a support guy, so that was the only combat mission that I was involved in my time in the military. After that, I went to South Korea for a year, and then I was in Colorado, stationed in Colorado from 92 to 96 when I got out of the Air Force.
So how would you say, like, how was the racism what you would have to face when it came to your time serving? Like, did you experience it firsthand being a shorter black man at all?
Race in America is something that certainly it's better than it was, say, in the 1960s, but being born in 1970, I'm not that far removed from, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X,
right.
So, John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Just that all happened in the 60s. So I'm not that far removed. There's a movie with Taraji P. Henson called The Best of Enemies, and that was about school integration and the KKK. And that movie takes place in 1970. So that's the the year I was born. So when it comes to race in America, I think a lot of people look at these periods in American history and look at it in a linear fashion and look at these lines of demarcation as events that solved any racial issues in America, and it really, that's not really the case. I mean, a lot of people think of things like the Civil War and the Emancipation Proclamation, and okay, so that solved racism pretty much, you know, the end of slavery, but then they look at, in 1954, Brown versus Board of Education, okay? So they think, oh, that solved all racial disparity in education. No, it's just that it's important, yes, but it didn't. And, it, you know, then they look at, say, the, you know, Equal Rights Act or the Voting Rights Act, you know, 65, and so on and so forth, and like I said, in school integration in the South in 1970, even now you have Black Lives Matter, you have statistically, you can demonstrate how African-American men are pulled over more than any other demographic, there's unfairness in sentencing, so a lot of race. When I was in the military, I would say the military is probably the best tool for integration America has, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there's always racial microaggressions. And I think as an African American, you learn to do two things. You learn to code switch. You know, you can talk and behave differently around a group of Black people than if you were in a business sitting with a group of white people. You also learn to turn a blind eye and to laugh off or dismiss a lot of racial microaggressions, right? So those microaggressions were, by and large, the main thing I would say I can had to contend with in the military. In the military, I didn't really have other military personnel have a race issue. However, there's always things like, don't go to that side of town because it's sketch. Well, why is it sketch? Because that's a Black neighborhood. So there's always things like that. When I was stationed in Mississippi, there was a huge issue with GIs fighting local people in Biloxi, but there was a racial component, yes. However, a lot of that stemmed from the ignorance of Southerners in that part of the country still feeling and passing down generationally that the U.S. military, i.e. us, were an occupying force of the Northern Army. It was really weird. So, yes, I was called the N-word a couple times, and a few times in Mississippi, not by military people, but by locals in, you know, Biloxi. And, you know, at the same time, I can remember one night waiting for, at that time, we didn't have Uber or Lyft, so I was waiting for a cab. I was on a date with a Caucasian female, and we were just sitting there waiting for a cab, and a car full of Caucasian males pulled up and said, hey, if we're going to go down to the store, if you're here when we get back, we're going to kill you, nigger. And this was 1989 America. So, I mean, when it comes to race, I think instead of thinking linearly, linear in a linear fashion. I think we need to think generationally. And you're 27. I just turned 50 a few months ago, right? I'm close to 51, but right. So this is my 50th year. And so that is something that I experienced in my lifetime. And you have to then take into consideration, when I was born in 1970, I still have memories of not only my grandparents, but of my great-grandparents. So my mom was born in, you know, early 1950s, right? So she lived through the civil rights movement of the 60s. And her parents were born in the early 1900s. So let's see, I think my mom's mom, I believe, was born in the 1920s, right? So you have the, so if you think of everything that went on in American history, especially with race, let's say 1920 to 1950, you know, you got the Tuskegee Airmen, you got the Tuskegee syphilis experiments, right? You have things like the Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street, you have the riots, the race riots in St. Augustine, Watts, and this is before the 80s and 90s with, you know, the Tupac era, if you will, and Rodney King and things like that. So and then you have my great-grandparents who were born just on the later years of the 1880s. So their parents were slaves, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think of it in a non-linear fashion, you think of it generationally, me being born in 1970, I have touched slavery, right? Because my great-grandparents, whom I remember, they may have been born free, but their parents were slaves. And their grandparents were slaves. So really, 2021 is not really that far removed from 1865, if you think of it in generational terms, not linear terms.
This is very true. It's crazy how close that your generation is with the slaves, and how you're right about people saying it does, you know, it seems like it's so long ago, but in actuality, like, it really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, still, like, you know, the microaggressions and the racism today is still prevalent no matter what. But do you feel like while you were serving that maybe it felt like a more equal battleground between, like, the treatment of you and the whites, or, like, were you, like, more friends with more Caucasians, or did you see a lot of black people serving with you as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, the military is a great melting pot, and I think in terms of diversity, inclusion, and equity, although probably not perfect, nothing is perfect. I mean, the military is a microcosm of American society as a whole, but I think very highly of the military's efforts to have equality. I mean, if you think about it, we have women at West Point, women at all of the academies now, right? We have women fighter pilots. We have women entering roles that were traditionally male as far as combat positions. That being said, you have to take into account that people of color have always been part of the U.S. military and have always contributed, as you know, you look at the Wind Talkers. There were plenty of Japanese Americans that contributed in World War II. So there's always, as being a microcosm of society, so there's always going to be that underlying factor, right? I mean, someday I'm sure it'll go away. However, I would say that as a snapshot of society, the equality that and equity that the American ideal tries to strive for, I think is the military, U.S. military leads the way. I mean, I was very close with a lot of Caucasians. You always have those subcultures, right? So there was always a group of, you know, African Americans that I hung out with. At the same time, several of my roommates in the military were Caucasians. I mean, my best friends in life is a diverse group of guys. So certainly, I just spent Labor Day Sunday, you know, at a barbecue with my two best friends from high school. Happened to be Caucasian. They were also in the Air Force. So,
did you get to see them a lot? Well, were you all in the Air Force at the same time?
We overlapped, but I left home first, and then Mark left home about a year after I did, and then Kevin left for the Air Force a year after that. So we were never stationed together. We overlapped a couple times at duty stations where one of us was leaving and the other one was newly assigned at that base. So we saw each other a couple times, but we were never stationed at the same place at the same time together.
Oh. That's so cool that you guys stayed close. How did you stay so close to your family and your friends during that time? Like, while they were serving and you were serving, did you guys write letters to each other?
I think when you're in boot camp, you start by writing, but I mean, really didn't write a lot of letters after that. I mean, you do the Christmas card thing, but most of the time in those days, it was phone calls. You know, you talked on the phone quite a bit. Nowadays, we still maintain a connection through, I mean, yeah, there's phone calls, but I mean, there's so many methods of communication now. There's DM, there's texting, there's Snapchat, Instagram, FaceTime. I don't do Facebook, but, the other types of social media, like I said, I just mentioned Snapchat, you know, texting, DM, Instagram, all of that are ways that we stay in touch. On the, with my family, for instance, my mom, I probably call every few days, and I try to make it to Baltimore, you know, as often as I can, which I do. And then I would say moving to Florida, as opposed to living in Colorado, I've gone back and forth to Baltimore a couple times, more often. It's just cheaper and easier, shorter flight. It's actually pretty easy to get there and back. It's actually an easy road trip, too. It's about 16, 17 hours, just hop in the car, which, I mean, it sounds like a lot, but if you think about it, it really isn't. I mean, I typically work a 16-hour shift at work, so that's just doubles. So basically, the amount of time I'm at work, I could hop in a car and drive to Baltimore. So, I mean, if everything's relative, right? You put it, frame it in those terms, it's really not as bad as you think. But, I mean, a 2-hour flight is definitely easier. But, and then as far as my best friends from high school and couple of my best friends that I made while the 20 plus years I lived in Colorado, we're all whom I guess as the center of that circle of friends, not in a pompous way, that's not what I mean. I just mean like 6 degrees of separation, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, linking these guys together we're all on a group text, and we text each other and talk about sports, and we send funny memes and stuff every day. So I have a group text, if you will, that we talk every day. So that's one way we stay close. If somebody's going through something, it's mentioned, and any words of encouragement, prayers, what have you. But it's, so that's one way to stay in touch, I guess. Technology is a good thing in that regard, I guess. This is a good thing. That's a good thing of technology. Reality TV, the Kardashians, that's a bad thing about technology. So.
Well, it's so wholesome to hear that, you know, you guys still stay close and do what you can. Got just a couple minutes left, so I think I'll ask you one more question. But it will be kind of like a question with whatever else you would like to say. But what did you learn about yourself during your time, and what advice do you have to give to others who are going to enlist as young as you did?
So you're asking, what did I learn about myself, about my time in the military?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I think the easiest way to answer that, self-confidence. I think my time in the military really taught me that if I set my mind to it and I'm bound and determined to it, I can do anything, right? So it really taught me to, you know, not doubt myself. As I said before, I have self-confidence and apply myself and not be afraid to fail. So if I give something my all, give it 100%, if it doesn't work out the way I wanted it to or thought it was, just to bounce back from that, reframe it, and either try again at that same thing or use that as a stepping stone, not a stumbling block or any kind of barrier. You know, it taught me to, hope for the best, expect the worst, accept what happens.
Those are really encouraging words.
I think very highly of military service. So I would encourage any young person that doesn't have a clear cut plan or path to what they want to do in life, and especially if they don't have the discipline, then you have to know thyself and be introspective, right? So if you wanted to be, say, a doctor, and you weren't going to screw around and party, you know, you knew you were going to go to CSU, you know, 4 years, you know, enter pre-med, then med school at, say, CU, or going to be a lawyer, you're going to go to DU, what have you, and you had a clear-cut plan for yourself from 18 to 25, and barring a tragedy, again, that you, if you had to adjust and overcome, we all have to do that, right? Mm-hmm. But if you are the kind of young person that has that kind of discipline, great. Obviously, there's some people that do, right? There are a lot of great doctors in this world that didn't join the military. So, however, if you, again, know thyself, if you don't have that kind of discipline and or money, right, then I would say the military, what I would tell a young person is the military is a great, and not everyone in the military becomes an infantryman. You don't have to be a frontline commander. There's so many things that the military offers. Yeah, and you get college and GI Bill, different college programs. So the military is a great place to start your life from 18 to 21, and it will help you, give you that discipline, that drive, teach you those life lessons about adapting and overcoming and improvising and reframing that I mentioned, and teach you that, you know, you get out of the military and then you have so many more skill sets, and just your people skills and just the way you see life and your philosophy on accomplishing life goals. So much, you know, different than being in the military. That's what I would tell any young person that was thinking about joining the military.
Well, thank you so, so much for this interview today and your thoughts. I really appreciate your serving for us and you being able to take time out of your day and, you know, go over all this with me and remember all this with me.
Thank you. You're very welcome. I'm glad I can help.
Yes, thank you so, so much.